Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 12, 2014. The United Nations Security Council pays a visit to South Sudan with a strong message.
The international community will not tolerate violations of the cessation of hostilities, and that people who spoil the peace agreement, people who commit gross violations of human rights, must be held accountable.
And the African Union conducts a commission of inquiry into alleged atrocities committed across the country. But some people say there should be peace before officials focus on justice.
We are in Warab State because if you are doing a commission of inquiry, you don't just limit yourself to the actual states that were concerned. We need to interact with the people of the entire nation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Security Council arrived in Juba today. The diplomats are in South Sudan in an effort to pressure the warring parties to end the fighting, which began in December. The delegation is led by the Security Council president, who is accompanied by other 14 council members, including Washington's UN ambassador. From Juba, Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA on a news conference the Security Council members held after meeting with President Kiir and his cabinet.
The Security Council visit to Juba comes days after the two sides missed a deadline to conclude talks on the formation of a transitional government. The government and rebels continue eager mediated negotiations in Addis Ababa, and the international community is trying to keep up the pressure on both sides to end the eight-month-old conflict. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, says the Security Council visit is aimed at ensuring President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar end the conflict quickly or face sanctions.
This Security Council visit comes in a way as an emergency visit to this country to underscore to the leadership here just how important it is to follow through on the commitments made to put together a transitional governing body in the run-up to elections. We will engage Riek Machar as well, probably tomorrow, and we will deliver a very tough message to him as well, that the international community will not tolerate violations of the cessation of hostilities, and that people who spoil the peace agreement, people who commit gross violations of human rights, must be held accountable. That is our message to all parties.
Power says the international community cannot continue watching as more people are killed, and estimates are that as many as 50,000 children under 5 years old may die due to malnutrition caused in part by the ongoing crisis. Power expressed disappointment with the warring parties' failure to agree on the formation of a transitional government, which they committed to in June.
There is no military solution. It is important that all parties live by this message. We hear very worrying reports of more arms being brought into this country in order to set the stage for another battle, another set of battles when the dry season commences. This is deeply alarming. And so the round of talks now underway in Addis have to be taken seriously by both parties, and there has to be urgency in the manner with which both delegations try to achieve the lasting peace.
Power says they are scheduled to meet top officials from IGAD to get an update on the Addis Ababa talks and to express the Council's concerns with the ongoing crisis. Meanwhile, Security Council President Mark Gran, who is the British ambassador to the UN, threatens more action if the crisis is not resolved soon.
The Security Council expresses its readiness to consider, in consultations with relevant parties, including IGAD and the African Union, all appropriate measures, including targeted sanctions, against those who take action that undermines the peace, stability, and security of South Sudan, including those who prevent the implementation of these agreements.
Rwanda's UN ambassador, Eugen Richard, is a part of the UN team. He says the Security Council visit to South Sudan allows them to express support for the IGAD talks.
And to tell all parties that they should implement agreements that they signed. And the parties must know that the people of South Sudan have suffered enough, and that the international community will not look on as a seemingly endless situation lingers on.
The Security Council team left Juba after the meeting with the government officials to travel to Malakal, one of the towns worst hit by the fighting. The newly appointed head of the UN mission in South Sudan, Ellen Margaret, is accompanying the Security Council team. This is the Security Council's first visit to South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Tough talk today from U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who says he's deeply concerned by the failure of South Sudan's peace talks to meet the region's deadline on a transitional government. Kerry notes the two warring parties agreed to take no more than 60 days to form a transitional government of national unity. Despite the help of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development and other regional leaders, Kerry says neither the government nor the SPLM in opposition engage in peace talks seriously. Kerry calls this, quote, an outrage and an insult to the people of South Sudan, end quote. He also condemned the recent clashes in Mban County and says he is especially concerned about reports of civilians that may have been systematically murdered based on their ethnicity. He says due to the fighting, South Sudan faces the worst food security crisis in the world with a real risk of famine. He called on IGAD and the African Union to take immediate action, saying enough is enough. State and civil society leaders in Warab State say restoring peace should be the country's top priority. That's what they told a delegation of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan, who were in the state capital Kwajok on Friday. The state officials say peace must be restored before issues of accountability are dealt with by the African Union. For VOA News, Santino Munut Ayuel has this story from Kwajok.
Justice Sophia Kupo, who led the AU delegation, told state and civil society leaders that her team is here to investigate alleged abuses committed during the conflict and gather views on how to move the country forward.
We are in Warab State because if you are doing a commission of inquiry into something as what happened, you don't just stay and limit yourself to the actual states that were concerned. We need to interact with the people of the entire nation to be able to know what impact it has had on them and then what ideas they have about what should now happen as the way forward to repairing and reconciling the country.
Warab State Acting Governor Ken Tong Aleu says while he agrees that the perpetrators of serious crimes must face justice, the priority now is to restore peace.
Go and reconcile between the people, and those who have committed crimes should be brought to books. They should be held accountable. If Riek Machar has committed crimes, he should face justice. And if our government has done something wrong, it should also be held accountable so that there is justice and rule of law.
Warab State political advisor Anand Munadik says Warab citizens are yearning for peace. He says those who have killed people or committed other crimes against humanity will not accept peace if they know they will be sent to prison or worse.
We in government, we need peace. But the way the African Union has started, this process will jeopardize peace because the African Union has now begun looking for people who have killed. How will people who have killed accept peace, yet they know they're going to be arrested?
Acting Governor Leo says although it is clear the conflict has taken on ethnic overtones, with gunmen from certain tribes targeting others on the basis of their ethnicity, authorities in this state will do everything they can to protect members of the minority Nuer ethnic group.
There is no war between Dinka and Nuer. And to prove this, I told them that we have over 54,000 internally displaced persons in Tweed County and other counties bordering Unity State.
The AU Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan ended its investigation tour of Greater Bahr al-Ghazal region in Warrawa State on Friday. Next week, the commission is set to meet with government officials, civil society leaders and citizens in Juba to gather more information on alleged crimes committed as well as suggestions on how to finally resolve the conflict and move the country forward. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manuda Yuelin Kwajok, Warrawa State.
Despite having abundant water resources with potential to generate hydroelectric power and hence agricultural production and attract tourists, South Sudan will not be tapping into those resources anytime soon due to the ongoing insecurity. An environmental expert says if South Sudanese leaders would end the war and concentrate instead on investing in the nation's water resources, the government could significantly improve the lives of ordinary citizens. For VOA News, Philip Thornaleu has this story from Entebbe, Uganda.
Abdullah Karim Hussein Said, head of Water Resources Management at Nile Basin Initiative, says despite the country's significant water resources, South Sudan only reaps short-term benefits from the Nile waters.
It has relatively significant water resource potential. If you take the Sud, it is a very big environmental asset. With endemic fish, endemic birds, and from environmental perspective, it has huge potential. At the same time, it is a source of livelihood for the local community there, and not only water, but also fishing, agriculture. And it has also, on the eastern side, you have the Sobat River, and on the western side, you have the Bahr al-Ghazal, and also navigation potentials as well.
Hussein says these water resources could be exploited if it weren't for the ongoing conflict, not to mention the decades of war that preceded South Sudan's independence, which hampered any kind of development in the region for years. Hussein says one of the first things the government must do is develop the country's infrastructure, including roads and bridges that will connect town to water resources. He says the government must also collect data on its water resources in order to fast-track the work of potential investors.
River gauging networks, climatic networks, they are not in good shape. Still, I know I have some, you know, I've been traveling to South Sudan now since about a year and a half or 2 years, and I always discuss with colleagues from the Ministry of Electricity, Dams and Water, and there's a lot of effort to develop plans for development, like the Irrigation Master Plan, for example.
South Sudan is one of the 11 Nile Basin countries, meaning countries connected by the River Nile. Hussein says the Nile Basin Initiative, a project intended to ensure proper management of water resources in the region, is funding a riverbank monitoring network in South Sudan. He says it is imperative that the government inject more money into the initiative. He says few South Sudanese have sufficient access to clean water and electricity, and millions of them are put insecure. That could change, Hussein says, if the government focuses on its water resources.
The indicators show you there's huge, you know, demand for development. I don't have, you know, any factual data on how much investment is being made in South Sudan, but qualitatively speaking, I know there's a lot of effort being done, and which has to be strengthened and accelerated. I believe South Sudan has quite a lot of potential not yet tapped, quite a lot of water resources not yet tapped, which can be used for the benefit of its people.
The government says it has no data on its water resources at this time. Hussein says South Sudan is at the bottom of the Nile Basin.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up next, South Sudanese use drama to pass messages of peace. That story is coming up.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can local people better influence national decision-making?
Through participation and engagement with topical issues that affect their lives.
Besides toying, I don't see, we've been trying for years, we have lots of stuff to say, but nobody listens. We try and do lots of things, but nobody listens. You have to go through so many, there's just way too much red tape and bureaucracy to get through.
Oh yeah, they should be influenced, all those MPs, they should go in the areas, in their constituencies, whereby they should advocate and they talk to the people, whereby they tell them that this is what's supposed to be done and this is what's supposed to be done.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about a vaccine for TB. The so-called BCG vaccine is used in dozens of countries to protect people against acquiring active tuberculosis. The latest study finds the common immunization also shields children from becoming infected with TB in the first place. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Some 2 billion people may be silently infected with tuberculosis. Active TB kills an estimated 1.5 million people each year. The BCG vaccine, developed early in the last century by French researchers, is made of live weakened bacterium that causes a form of tuberculosis in cows. The vaccine does not infect people with the disease, and it's been given for decades to children to protect them from severe respiratory TB and meningitis. A blood test showed the vaccine may also keep children from becoming infected in the first instance. Dr. Ibrahim Abubakar of University College London believes as many youngsters as possible in TB endemic countries should be immunized.
Our findings support the idea that BCG should continue to be used, in especially in the high burden setting, but that there should be greater attempts to give it as early as possible before people have been infected, so that they can gain the benefit of preventing the infections before it happens in the first place.
Researchers led by Abubakar, who heads England's Tuberculosis Control Program, analyzed data collected between 1950 and 2013 on the effectiveness of BCG in children under 16 years old. Many had been vaccinated and then exposed to someone who had active tuberculosis. The 14 studies involved more than 3,800 children from northern latitudes in Britain, Spain, Greece, Italy, and Turkey, and countries nearer the equator in Gambia, Indonesia, South Africa, and Cambodia. Compared to unvaccinated children, BCG overall was 19% effective in preventing infections in those who were immunized and then exposed to TB through an infected family member or friend. BCG worked best in northern latitudes, affording 26% protection against tuberculosis infections. Abubakar says the evidence suggests BCG would be effective in protecting many older individuals.
Who, for example, are in a very low incidence country. If you vaccinate them early, you could probably protect them from acquiring infection in the first place.
Experts say the findings could influence TB immunization programs and lead to the development of new, improved vaccines. Studies show the BCG vaccine can offer upwards of 60 to 80% protection against the severest forms of tuberculosis in children. The study on the BCG vaccine was published in the British Medical Journal. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Still on health issues, the number of deaths from the Ebola outbreak has now surpassed 1,000. The World Health Organization has given a green light for the use of unproven drugs to fight the deadly Ebola outbreak in four West African countries. A panel of specialists agreed it is ethical to offer this treatment to try to curb the Ebola epidemic, which is the largest and most severe ever seen. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the headquarters in Geneva.
There have been a number of Ebola outbreaks in Eastern and Central Africa over the past 40 years. The World Health Organization was able to stop those outbreaks by identifying and isolating all cases of the disease, tracing those who have come in contact with infected individuals, and providing protective covering to healthcare workers. But officials from the UN Health Agency acknowledge what has worked in the past is not working now. They say the outbreak in four West African countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Nigeria, continues to spread and appears to be unstoppable. Therefore, WHO Assistant Director General Marie-Paul Kini says, the panel of experts who convened Monday unanimously agreed that it is ethical to offer unproven medicines as potential treatments.
The magnitude and the spread of the outbreak makes it that we don't have enough people to use and to rely only, if I may say, on what has traditionally worked if we want to stop the outbreak as quickly as possible. So this is why, in these particular circumstances, the ethicists have felt that it was ethical to propose these treatments and this vaccine, although they have not been registered yet.
West African health authorities report that more than 1,800 people have come down with Ebola and more than 1,000 have died. There is no cure for this disease, which can kill up to 90% of its victims and is spread through direct contact with the blood or bodily fluids of an infected person. Researchers have found some potential treatments and vaccines that could help bring Ebola under control. But while a handful of these drugs have shown positive results in monkeys, they have not been clinically tested in humans to see whether they are safe and effective. The health of two American aid workers who got infected with Ebola in Liberia has improved since they were treated with an experimental drug known as ZMapp. This has raised hopes of other successful treatments by using this and other unproven drugs. While the WHO has given the go-ahead for the use of untested treatments and vaccines, Dr. Kini says certain ethical criteria must guide their use. These include transparency of care, informed consent, freedom of choice, confidentiality, and community involvement.
The panel also emphasized that because we know so little about safety and efficacy in humans, whenever these treatments are provided for what we call compassionate use, which means as defined as access to an unapproved drug outside of a clinical trial, then there is a moral obligation to collect and share all data generated.
The World Health Organization says it will push for the speedy start of clinical trials for Ebola drugs that look promising. It notes that trials for two vaccine candidates might begin by the end of September. Were this to happen, it says information regarding their safety could be available by the end of the year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Youth in South Sudan have found a creative outlet to turn to as the peace talks in Addis Ababa drag on with little progress to show for 6 months of on-again, off-again negotiations. They are using drama, music, poetry, and even comedy to promote peace among South Sudan's diverse ethnic communities, as they did last weekend when hundreds turned up at Juba's Nyokuron Cultural Center for a peace concert. Mungume Davis Rakarinj was there.
Dozens of artists, like local band Kuzo's Clan, who delighted the crowd with their song No More War, performed at Saturday's peace concert. Augustino Cole Deng, chairperson of the NGO, South Sudan Peace and Development Organization, which organized the event, says everyone, including young people, are exhausted and simply want peace.
The most people who have suffered, the most people who are divided, are the youth, basically. I think when you see it in the theater, there are many because they need to have the peaceful coexistence within them so that we can send messages.
Deng says the youth also use comedy to deliver their message.
Dodole, how old are you? Tell them, I am just 11 years, 0.5. Dodole, 11 years, 0.5? Yes, sir. Where are the rest of this 0.5 gone? I was born late. Why are you somebody from the... You have just completed senior four, and you're telling me you were born late. No, sir.
26-year-old Emmanuel Dule goes by the stage name Lotole. He says for young people, the best way to promote peace is through programs like this that let them have fun.
When you are making somebody to feel happy, you are like reducing the trauma. The person may forget all that has happened in the past because the person will be so committed and laughing and very happy, so joyful. So when you are happy, actually you cannot plan of having a war or planning to fight. That's a sense of unity we need to bring into the country just through type of entertainment.
23-year-old Winnie Bassa is a big fan of the festival.
This event is going to pass a lot of messages to the young people and to everyone that we should live together as one. We should love one another. I've learned to believe in myself.
In this drama, a woman runs to the village chief to report her son-in-law for battering and assaulting her daughter. The woman demands that the man be sentenced to death. After hearing the case, the Panda village chief sentences the culprit to 1 year in prison. Long-time playwright, poet and dramatist Joseph Abuk says these plays mirror real life in South Sudan.
The things you are doing here are not a joke. You are very concerned. Most of your songs really can touch one's heart because you are calling for understanding. You are calling for people to realize they are going in the wrong way.
Organizers say they plan to hold more events just like this one throughout the country. For VOA News, I am Gumedes Ruakarinj in Juba.
Those were voices of youth in Juba, but we have some breaking news just coming in. Caro, what do you have?
Thanks, John. The United States will give South Sudan about $180 million in emergency food aid to help avert famine. National Security Advisor Susan Rice announced the funding today, saying that South Sudan is facing the worst food security situation in the world.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of our show today. We now leave you with the song Let Me Go by Tolise.
Come on.
We have been listening to Toulouse and the song Let Me Go. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us tomorrow again for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.